Hello, and welcome to the Dozing Off Podcast. I'm your host and narrator, Lance Lewis, and this is a podcast where I read you to sleep. Short stories and classic literature in this deep and relaxing tone to allow you to put your overactive mind at ease and doze off. Tonight, I narrated The Model Millionaire by Oscar Wilde. There is one character in this story that occasionally speaks some French, so if you can speak French, I am so sorry for what you're about to hear when I butcher some of these words. But this story came to about 15 minutes, so be sure to loop it one time for you to ensure that you fall asleep and you stay asleep. If you're here supporting, whether it's your first time hearing Dozing Off or you're an avid listener, I appreciate you so much for being a part of the community. And here we go. The Model Millionaire. Unless one is wealthy, there is no use in being a charming fellow. Romance is the privilege of the rich, not the profession of the unemployed. The poor should be practical and prosaic. It is better to have a permanent income than to be fascinating. These are the great truths of modern life which Huey Erskine never realized. Poor Huey. Intellectually, we must admit, he was not of much importance. He never said a brilliant or even an ill-natured thing in his life. But then, he was wonderfully good-looking, with his crisp brown hair, his clear-cut profile, and his gray eyes. He was as popular with men as he was with women, and he had every accomplishment except that of making money. His father had bequeathed him his cavalry sword, and a history of the Peninsular War in 15 volumes. Huey hung his first over his looking glass, put the second on a shelf between Ruff's Guide and Bailey's Magazine, and lived on $200 a year that an old aunt allowed him. He had tried everything. He had gone on the stock exchange for 6 months, but what was a butterfly to do among bulls and bears? He had been a tea merchant for a little longer, but had soon tired of Pico and Souchong. Then he had tried selling dry sherry. That did not answer. The sherry was a little too dry. Ultimately, he became nothing. A delightful, ineffectual young man with a perfect profile and no profession. To make matters worse, he was in love. The girl he loved was Laura Merton, the daughter of a retired colonel who had lost his temper and his digestion in India, and had never found either of them again. Laura adored him, and he was ready to kiss her shoestrings. They were the handsomest couple in London, and had not a penny peace between them. The colonel was very fond of Huey, but would not hear of any engagement. Come to me, my boy, when you have got 10,000 pounds of your own, and we will see about it, he used to say, and Huey looked very glum on those days and had to go to Laura for consolation. One morning, as he was on his way to Holland Park, where the Mertons lived, he dropped in to see a great friend of his, Alan Trevor. Trevor was a painter. Indeed, a few people escape that nowadays. But he was also an artist, and artists are rather rare. Personally, he was a strange, rough fellow, with a freckled face and a red, ragged beard. However, when he took up the brush, he was a real master, and his pictures were eagerly sought after. He had been very much attracted by Huey at first, it must be acknowledged, entirely on account of his personal charm. "The only people a painter should know," he used to say, "are people who are beat and beautiful, people who are an artistic pleasure to look at and an intellectual riposte to talk to. Men who are dandies and women who are darlings rule the world. At least they should do so." However, after he got to know Huey better, he liked him quite as much for his bright, buoyant spirit and his generous, reckless nature, and he had given him permanent entry to his studio. When Huey came in, he found Trevor putting the finishing touches to a wonderful, life-size picture of a beggar man. The beggar himself was standing on a raised platform in a corner of the studio. He was a wizened old man, with a face like wrinkled parchment and a most piteous expression. Over his shoulders was flung a coarse brown cloak, all tears and tatters. His thick boots were patched and cobbled, and with one hand he leant on a rough stick, while with the other, he held out his battered hat for alms. "What an amazing model," whispered Huey as he shook hands with his friend. "An amazing model," shouted Trevor at the top of his voice. "I should think so. Such beggars as he are not met with every day." "A trouveau, mon cher, a living Velasquez, my stars. What an etching Rembrandt would have made of him." "Poor old chap," said Huey. "How miserable he looks. But I suppose to you painters, his face is his fortune." "Certainly," replied Trevor. "You don't want a beggar to look happy, do you?" "How much does a model get for sitting?" asked Huey, as he found himself a comfortable seat on the divan. "A shilling an hour." "And how much do you get for your picture, Alan?" "Oh, for this, I get 2,000. "Pounds?" "Guineas. Painters, poets, and physicians always get guineas." "Well, I think the model should have a percentage," cried Huey, laughing. "They work quite as hard as you do." "Nonsense, nonsense. Why, look at the trouble of laying on the paint alone, and standing all day looking at one's easel. It's all very well, Huey, for you to talk, but I assure you that there are moments when art almost attains to the dignity of manual labor. But you mustn't chatter. I'm very busy. Smoke a cigarette and keep quiet." After some time, the servant came in and told Trevor that the frame maker wanted to speak to him. "Don't run away, Huey," he said as he went out. "I'll be back in a moment." The old beggar man took advantage of Trevor's absence to rest for a moment on a wooden bench that was behind him. He looked so forlorn and wretched that Huey could not help pitying him, and felt in his pockets to see what money he had. All he could find was a sovereign and some coppers. "Poor old fellow," he thought to himself. "He wants it more than I do, but it means no hansoms for a fortnight." And he walked across the studio and slipped the sovereign into the beggar's hand. The old man started, and a faint smile flitted across his withered lips. "Thank you, sir," he said. "Thank you." Then Trevor arrived, and Huey took his leave, blushing a little at what he had done. He spent the day with Laura, got a charming scolding for his extravagance and had to walk home. That night, he strolled into the Palette Club about 11 o'clock and found Trevor sitting by himself in the smoking room, drinking hock and seltzer. "Well, Ellen, did you get the picture finished all right?" he said as he lit his cigarette. "Finished and framed, my boy," answered Trevor. "And, by the by, you have made a conquest. That old model you saw is quite devoted to you. I had to tell him about you, who you are, where you live, what your income is, what prospects you have." "My dear Alan," cried Huey, "I shall probably find him waiting for me when I go home. But of course you're only joking. Poor old wretch. I wish I could do something for him. I think it is dreadful that anyone should be so miserable. I have got heaps of old clothes at home. Do you think he would care for any of them? Why, his rags were falling to bits." "But he looks splendid in them," said Trevor. "I wouldn't paint him in a frock coat for anything. What you call rags, I call romance. What seems poverty to you is picturesque to me. However, I'll tell him your offer." "Alan," said Huey seriously, "you painters are a heartless lot." "An artist's heart is his head," replied Trevor. "And besides, our business is to realize the world as we see it, not to reform to it as we know it. Et chacun son métier. And now tell me how Laura is. The old model was quite interested in her." "You don't mean to say you talked to him about her," said Huey. "Certainly I did." "He knows all about the relentless Colonel, the lovely Laura, and the 10,000. "You told that old beggar all my private affairs?" cried Huey, looking very red and angry. "My dear boy," said Trevor, smiling, "that old beggar, as you call him, is one of the richest men in Europe. He could buy all London tomorrow without overdrawing his account. He has a house in every capital, dines off gold plate, and can prevent Russia going to war when he chooses." "What on earth do you mean?" exclaimed Huey. "What I say," said Trevor. "The old man you saw today in the studio was Baron Halsberg. He's a great friend of mine, buys all my pictures and that sort of thing, and gave me a commission a month ago to paint him as a beggar." "Qu'en voulez-vous? La fantaisie d'un millionnaire. And I must say he made a magnificent figure in his rags. Or perhaps should I say, in my rags. They are an old suit I got in Spain." "Baron Halsberg," cried Huey. "Good heavens. I gave him a sovereign." And he sank into an armchair, the picture of dismay. "Gave him a sovereign?" shouted Trevor, and he burst into a roar of laughter. "My dear boy, you'll never see it again. Son affaire cesse l'argent des atouts." "I think you might have told me, Alan," said Huey sulkily, "and not have let me make such a fool of myself." "Well, to begin with, Huey," said Trevor, "it never entered my mind that you went about disturbing alms in that reckless way. I can understand you're kissing a pretty model, but you're giving a sovereign to an ugly one? By Jove, no. Besides, the fact is that I really was not at home today to anyone. And when you came in, I didn't know whether Halsberg would like his name mentioned. You know, he wasn't in full dress." "What a duffer he must think me," said Huey. "Not at all. He was in the highest spirits after you left, kept chuckling to himself and rubbing his old wrinkled hands together. I couldn't make out why he was so interested to know all about you, but I see it all now. He'll invest your sovereign for you, Huey, pay you the interest every 6 months, and have a capital story to tell after dinner. I am an unlucky devil, growled Huey. The best thing I can do is go to bed, and my dear Alan, you mustn't tell anyone. I shouldn't dare show my face on the row. Nonsense. It reflects the highest credit on your philanthropic spirit, Huey. And don't run away. Have another cigarette, and you can talk about Laura as much as you like. However, Huey wouldn't stop, but walked home, feeling very unhappy and leaving Alan Trevor in fits of laughter. The next morning, as he was at breakfast, the servant brought him up a card on which was written, Monsieur Gustave Nordin, de la part de M. La Baron Hosberg. I suppose he has come for an apology, said Huey to himself, and he told the servant to show the visitor up. An old gentleman with gold spectacles and gray hair came into the room and said, in a slight French accent, Have I the honor of addressing Monsieur Erskine? Huey bowed. I have come from Baron Hosberg, he continued. The Baron, I beg, sir, that you will offer him my sincerest apologies, stammered Huey. The Baron, said the old gentleman with a smile, has commissioned me to bring you this letter, and he extended a sealed envelope. On the outside was written, A wedding present to Hugh Erskine and Laura Merton from an old beggar, and inside was a check for $10,000. When they were married, Alan Trevor was the best man, and the Baron made a speech at the wedding breakfast. Millionaire models, remarked Alan, are rare enough, but, by Jove, model millionaires are rarer still. The Model Millionaire. Unless one is wealthy, there is no use in being a charming fellow. Romance is the privilege of the rich, not the profession of the unemployed. The poor should be practical and prosaic. It is better to have a permanent income than to be fascinating. These are the great truths of modern life, which Huey Erskine never realized. Poor Huey! Intellectually, we must admit, he was not of much importance. He never said a brilliant or even an ill-natured thing in his life. But then, he was wonderfully good-looking, with his crisp brown hair, his clear-cut profile, and his gray eyes. He was as popular with men as he was with women, and he had every accomplishment except that of making money. His father had bequeathed him his cavalry sword, and a history of the Peninsular War in 15 volumes. Huey hung his first over his looking glass, put the second on a shelf between Ruff's Guide and Bailey's Magazine, and lived on $200 a year that an old aunt allowed him. He had tried everything. He had gone on the stock exchange for 6 months, but what was a butterfly to do among bulls and bears? He had been a tea merchant for a little longer, but had soon tired of Pico and Souchong. Then he had tried selling dry sherry. That did not answer. The sherry was a little too dry. Ultimately, he became nothing. A delightful, ineffectual young man with a perfect profile and no profession. To make matters worse, he was in love. The girl he loved was Laura Merton, the daughter of a retired colonel who had lost his temper and his digestion in India, and had never found either of them again. Laura adored him, and he was ready to kiss her shoestrings. They were the handsomest couple in London, and had not a penny peace between them. The colonel was very fond of Hughie, but would not hear of any engagement. "Come to me, my boy, when you have got 10,000 pounds of your own, and we will see about it," he used to say. And Hughie looked very glum on those days, and had to go to Laura for consolation. One morning, as he was on his way to Holland Park, where the Mertons lived, he dropped in to see a great friend of his, Alan Trevor. Trevor was a painter. Indeed, a few people escape that nowadays. But he was also an artist, and artists are rather rare. Personally, he was a strange, rough fellow, with a freckled face and a red, ragged beard. However, when he took up the brush, he was a real master, and his pictures were eagerly sought after. He had been very much attracted by Hughie at first, it must be acknowledged, entirely on account of his personal charm. "The only people a painter should know," he used to say, "are people who are beaten beautiful, people who are an artistic pleasure to look at and an intellectual riposte to talk to. Men who are dandies and women who are darlings rule the world. At least they should do so." However, after he got to know Hughie better, he liked him quite as much for his bright, buoyant spirit and his generous, reckless nature, and he had given him permanent entry to his studio. When Hughie came in, he found Trevor putting the finishing touches to a wonderful life-size picture of a beggar man. The beggar himself was standing on a raised platform in a corner of the studio. He was a wizened old man, with a face like wrinkled parchment and a most piteous expression. Over his shoulders was flung a coarse brown cloak, all tears and tatters. His thick boots were patched and cobbled, and with one hand he leant on a rough stick, while with the other he held out his battered hat for alms. "What an amazing model," whispered Hughie as he shook hands with his friend. "An amazing model," shouted Trevor at the top of his voice. "I should think so. Such beggars as he are not met with every day." "A trouvaux, mon cher. A living Velasquez, my stars. What an etching Rembrandt would have made of him." "Poor old chap," said Hughie. "How miserable he looks. But I suppose to you painters, his face is his fortune." "Certainly," replied Trevor. "You don't want a beggar to look happy, do you?" "How much does a model get for sitting?" asked Hughie, as he found himself a comfortable seat on the divan. "A shilling an hour." "And how much do you get for your picture, Alan?" "Oh, for this, I get 2,000. "Pounds?" "Guineas. Painters, poets, and physicians always get guineas." "Well, I think the model should have a percentage," cried Hughie, laughing. "They work quite as hard as you do." "Nonsense, nonsense. Why, look at the trouble of laying on the paint alone, and standing all day looking at one's easel. It's all very well, Hughie, for you to talk, but I assure you that there are moments when art almost attains to the dignity of manual labor. But you mustn't chatter. I'm very busy. Smoke a cigarette and keep quiet." After some time, the servant came in and told Trevor that the frame maker wanted to speak to him. "Don't run away, Hughie," he said as he went out. "I'll be back in a moment." The old beggar man took advantage of Trevor's absence to rest for a moment on a wooden bench that was behind him. He looked so forlorn and wretched that Hughie could not help pitying him, and felt in his pockets to see what money he had. All he could find was a sovereign and some coppers. Poor old fellow, he thought to himself. He wants it more than I do, but it means no hansoms for a fortnight. And he walked across the studio and slipped the sovereign into the beggar's hand. The old man started, and a faint smile flitted across his withered lips. Thank you, sir, he said. Thank you. Then Trevor arrived, and Huey took his leave, blushing a little at what he had done. He spent the day with Laura, got a charming scolding for his extravagance, and had to walk home. That night, he strolled into the Palette Club about 11 o'clock and found Trevor sitting by himself in the smoking room, drinking hock and seltzer. Well, Ellen, did you get the picture finished all right? He said as he lit his cigarette. Finished and framed, my boy, answered Trevor. And, by the by, you have made a conquest. That old model you saw is quite devoted to you. I had to tell him about you, who you are, where you live, what your income is, what prospects you have. My dear Alan, cried Huey, I shall probably find him waiting for me when I go home. But of course you're only joking, poor old wretch. I wish I could do something for him. I think it is dreadful that anyone should be so miserable. I have got heaps of old clothes at home. Do you think he would care for any of them? Why, his rags were falling to bits. But he looks splendid in them, said Trevor. I wouldn't paint him in a frock coat for anything. What you call rags, I call romance. What seems poverty to you is picturesque to me. However, I'll tell him your offer. Alan, said Huey seriously, you painters are a heartless lot. An artist's heart is his head, replied Trevor. And besides, our business is to realize the world as we see it, not to reform to it as we know it. A chacun son métier. And now tell me how Laura is. The old model was quite interested in her. You don't mean to say you talked to him about her, said Huey. Certainly I did. He knows all about the relentless colonel, the lovely Laura, and the 10,000. You told that old beggar all my private affairs, cried Huey, looking very red and angry. My dear boy, said Trevor, smiling, that old beggar, as you call him, is one of the richest men in Europe. He could buy all London tomorrow without overdrawing his account. He has a house in every capital, dines off gold plate, and can prevent Russia going to war when he chooses. What on earth do you mean? Exclaimed Huey. What I say, said Trevor. The old man you saw today in the studio was Baron Halsberg. He's a great friend of mine, buys all my pictures and that sort of thing, and gave me a commission a month ago to paint him as a beggar. Que voulez-vous? La fantaisie d'un millionnaire. And I must say he made a magnificent figure in his rags, or perhaps should I say in my rags. They're an old suit I got in Spain. Baron Halsberg, cried Huey. Good heavens. I gave him a sovereign. And he sank into an armchair, the picture of dismay. Gave him a sovereign, shouted Trevor, and he burst into a roar of laughter. My dear boy, you'll never see it again. Son affaire c'est l'argent des atouts. I think you might have told me, Alan, said Huey sulkily, and not have let me make such a fool of myself. Well, to begin with, Huey, said Trevor, it never entered my mind that you went about disturbing alms in that reckless way. I can understand you're kissing a pretty model, but you're giving a sovereign to an ugly one? By Jove, no. Besides, the fact is, that I really was not at home today to anyone. And when you came in, I didn't know whether Hallsberg would like his name mentioned. You know, he wasn't in full dress. What a duffer he must think me, said Huey. Not at all. He was in the highest spirits after you left, kept chuckling to himself and rubbing his old wrinkled hands together. I couldn't make out why he was so interested to know all about you, but I see it all now. He'll invest your sovereign for you, Huey, pay you the interest every 6 months, and have a capital story to tell after dinner. I am an unlucky devil, growled Huey. The best thing I can do is go to bed, and my dear Alan, you mustn't tell anyone. I shouldn't dare show my face on the row. Nonsense. It reflects the highest credit on your philanthropic spirit, Huey. And don't run away. Have another cigarette, and you can talk about Laura as much as you like. However, Huey wouldn't stop, but walked home, feeling very unhappy and leaving Alan Trevor in fits of laughter. The next morning, as he was at breakfast, the servant brought him up a card on which was written, Monsieur Gustave Nordin, de la part de M. la Baron Hosberg. I suppose he has come for an apology, said Huey to himself, and he told the servant to show the visitor up. An old gentleman with gold spectacles and gray hair came into the room and said, in a slight French accent, Have I the honor of addressing Monsieur Erskine? Huey bowed. I have come from Baron Hosberg, he continued. The Baron, I beg, sir, that you will offer him my sincerest apologies, stammered Huey. The Baron, said the old gentleman with a smile, has commissioned me to bring you this letter, and he extended a sealed envelope. On the outside was written, A wedding present to Hugh Erskine and Laura Merton from an old beggar, and inside was a check for $10,000. When they were married, Alan Trevor was the best man, and the Baron made a speech at the wedding breakfast. Millionaire models, remarked Alan, are rare enough, but, by Jove, model millionaires are rarer still.